episode 3. This missive, this machination is over, but we're just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. I'm one of your hosts, the Talking Titan, aka Jason Reed, and with me, as always, is my co-host, the Gift of Gab herself, Gia Worthy. Gia, how are you doing this fine day, evening, night, whatever you folks are listening to this, how's it going?
Oh my god, it is going well. I don't know if I can rest with thinking about like with everything that went on in this episode. Like, how am I supposed to go about my day-to-day life? They did my man Alan the Alien dirty here.
Yeah, I was gonna say, no matter how you're doing, I think most of us are doing better than Alan the Alien right now. Sheesh. That was quite something. Now, going into this episode and seeing like half the episode, I was like, this seems like another kind of trudge through the grief of Omni-Man. It's like another kind of boring episode, but then it got interesting. It also ended on a very interesting high note. We will get into all that. I think a good step up in this season too, where I thought the first two episodes were kind of like really place setting for all of our characters and just kind of getting them into spots. We're starting to get into the action now. So I appreciate that about it.
Yeah. And I feel like this is the same thing that happened in the first season. So I feel like I really shouldn't be like too shocked that this is the flow that they're going with, but things really picked up here. I wasn't really sure where they were going because it starts with Mark getting like going to college. Like, he's at college now. They're in their first. That's probably like the first, I want to say like 5-6 minutes of the episode. Then we go into a completely different direction with Alan the Alien, RIP King, and only to then go like back into like these other worlds halfway through this episode. So there was just a lot. You could not look away from this episode because you're probably missing some important information.
Yeah, we talked a lot last episode about how many subplots we were juggling. This episode was a little less. I think last episode was like 6 or 8. This episode, we got about 4 plots that we were juggling and dealing with. So that was a little more palatable for me and not too much of a whiplash of looking back and forth and back and forth. The Alan the Alien stuff was almost wholly uninterrupted, which I appreciated because I don't really love going back and forth so much. So this was I could take a little better than last episode where we had so much going on
for real, and it just felt like they want us to get to know everybody that is going to be involved in this season. And then we still get more people in this episode that are going to be involved in this season. So it's just, I don't know if this is something that can necessarily be fixed for what Invincible is as a show. But, like, it does feel a little bit like an overwhelming info dump in a lot of places.
I will say, unlike the other episodes this season, I mean, there have only been 2 others, but this one left me in a place where I was like, I need to see the next episode.
Yes!
I can't wait for the next episode. So that's something to look forward to, some anticipation in our lives of Invincible. But let's jump into the episode. As you mentioned, the episode kind of starts with Mark being dropped off at college by Debbie. So it seems because last we left our heroes, it was summer, just started summer vacation. So it looks like we may have time jumped to 2 or 3 months or so. It's kind of the typical scene, the child is dropped off at college. Mom is having a tough time letting go. She says it'll be a fresh start for him to figure out who he is besides Invincible. They have a fun line. Don't do drugs. Like, would drugs even work on me? we're not really sure. Drugs might, but the problem is drugs might work on him and he might like go into a superhero rage or something. So that would be a problem.
I feel like he needs to start small. Like, take a puff of something.
Yeah.
From a close friend. Where does Mark live? Like, what city is he in now? Or what city does he live in normally?
I don't know if it's a factual city, like a real life city or okay. Like a made up cities. I don't know if he ever really caught the city that he lives in.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a chance that marijuana is legal in whatever state he is in currently. I am not confident. No. It is legal in the state that I live in. So I would just say start small. Because if he goes like right into coke, I just feel like that is a disaster waiting to happen. You know, I've never done coke, but I just imagine it won't end well.
We might have another Chicago on his hands. It's like,
another Chicago.
I will be taking over now. So you know, who knows? So yeah, like you said, take a little puff of something, see what it does, see how it makes you feel, and then go from there. Maybe stay away from the hard stuff.
Yeah, don't eat a brownie and then be like, this isn't working, and then eat another brownie, Mark, because that's where it gets you.
It's all about moderation, you know?
Yes, exactly. Take a bite and see what happens.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of take this into plot by plot. So we're going to stick with Mark here. Mark and William, luckily, you know, I guess they probably set up like this. Get the dorm room together. So Mark is with his buddy William. You know, Mark kind of... William kind of jokes with Mark, like, yes, all this childish stuff here. Like, what, you're supposed to be a grown man now. What's going on? I like the comparison. I need William to come and be like my interior designer, because yes, he had his stuff on lock and ready, while Mark was your kind of typical teenage kid, messy. I mean, typical even for 30-something girls, because I'm pretty much just as messy as Mark, to be honest with you. But we then get a, you know, a scene of some. It's like someone's like, "Hey, is this box I hear you guys' stuff?" And there's a box of, as Mark would term them, collectibles. William calls them toys. Mark picks him up. He sees all the people around him, I don't know, being adults, I guess, talking, conversating, and he's like, you know what, time for me to get rid of my childish things, and throws his stuff in the dumpster.
I have several issues with this. First of all, I do believe Mark was right, and those are collectibles. Like,
yes, 100%.
You know, they're not toys unless you play with them. Like, true. nothing wrong with... is he 18 now? Almost 18?
Yeah, I would assume he's about 18. Yeah.
Yeah. So if he's 18, totally fine. Like, if he wants to be an 18-year-old and play with his collectibles, play with his toys, that is fine. But for until he plays with them, those are collectibles. And also, like, you could have just left them at your mom's house. Like, these are not even a thing that had to be brought to campus if you were going to be so embarrassed by them. And also, Mark, just grow a pair. It's fine. People bring weirder stuff to college.
Yeah, and as a 30-something-year-old himself who likes to display some of his collectibles from a nostalgic age, I was like, Mark, what are you doing? Just set them up on like a shelf or something. Make them look nice. But no, you want to throw them away. At the very least, Mark, Donate them to a children's hospital or something. Sell them, donate them, something. Don't just throw them in the trash.
Your suggestion was much nicer than mine.
Yeah, a little more charitable, but it's okay. I also would have sold them.
Yeah, like if they're worth, you don't know, they could be worth something. And if not, donate them. But like, I mean, not that Mark needs the money, but, you know, like those student loans are going to hit eventually. And you're going to wish that you sold them.
Yeah.
But oh my God, you need to see my dad's. My dad is the same way. He has like, he's a very big sports guy. So he has like the, you know, they look like G.I. Joe, like army dolls, but they're all famous athletes through the years, and like mint condition in the box, all of it. Yep. Some of them out of the box. But yeah, like there is a difference, and we need to normalize collectibles as a hobby for everyone, but especially for men. Like, let men have nice things too sometimes.
Yeah, we need nice things.
Yeah, like, you can't just say men can't have any fun or have collectibles, like, displayed in a kind, like, very neat manner and not expect the world to go to shit. Like, let men have hobbies, please. Yes.
Let us live in our childhoods a little bit. Like, give us a break. The world is tough. We need some reminders of the good old days.
Yes.
There may or may not be a box of my old toys in my mom's house that I cannot ever, you know, actually
with. Yes.
So, yeah. So let him live a little bit.
Exactly. But
he does save Seance Dog, which is, you know, a cherished, I guess, childhood property of Mark's. He does save Seance Dog, one of the figures. So he comes back into the dorm, and, you know, Mark and William have come up with this, with the tried and true sock on the door trick. So Mark comes back and he sees the socks on the doors. He's like, oh great. William must be hooking up with that guy who came by the dorm room. So he goes to talk to Amber. He's kind of bummed about William seemingly blowing him off. And Amber's like, well, you know, we could do the same thing. We are in this dorm room by ourselves. We could do the damn thing. So, you know, Mark's like,
perfect solution.
Yeah, Mark's like, sure, I guess. Yeah, obviously he's very, very, you know, I honestly would have thought that they had already gone to this.
I level. Also presumed that. I did not know that this was like a big event now. Yeah. It's, you know, it's, it, I support young love being allowed to express themselves in that way. However, I also thought they had already done it. So yeah. this was one of the more shocking things of the episode, except for the shocking thing of the episode.
Yes. And you know, Amber, she asks all the right questions. Do you have super sperm? Are you going to accidentally crush me? You know, I guess these are things that Nolan, a.k.a. Omni-Man, did not get around teaching to Mark when training him in his superheroisms. Because Mark doesn't know. He's like, I guess we'll just see. And Amber is like, okay.
Perfect solution.
Yeah, we'll just take it slow at first. Amber volunteers to get on top first to see how that goes. So everything seems to be getting, you know, down and dirty. Inside the episode, that's when we go, I guess we'll come back to Mark, and we transition to another plot, but we're going to keep going with the Mark stuff here. Mark eventually does come back to the dorm room. He meets back up with William, who for some reason just knows that Mark has had sex with Amber. He's like, you had sex with Amber? Like, how did you know? I hope it wasn't like some sort of, I don't know, smell or something. He's like, hey, I smell
sex. It's a facial expression. There's just like a face of content. Like, yeah. Of like, you are satisfied with just how your life is going current, like the current trajectory of your life.
You've had a life-changing experience.
Yes. That is just like, that happened. I am a new person now. Life is good. Life is not so bad. Yeah. And William picked up on, he knew, he knows the look. And he was very open last season about his rendezvous at camp. So, and how that was life changing. So William is a man that knows.
Yes. He can tell the face. Something interesting that does kind of get brought up here is that, you know, Mark thought that William was also entertaining, but William says, no, I can't really seem to get myself to really go there with anyone after Rick. And we do get kind of a little update on Rick, who, for those who don't remember the first season, was William's kind of fling that he went to go visit at college that through many different things got turned into a semi-cyborg. So we do get an update about, you know, Rick's doing well. He can seemingly go home pretty soon. I mean, it's been about a year since all that stuff went down. So it's been a while that Rick's been on the mend. But, you know, apparently Rick is on his way back to outside society, which I found interesting that we got a little nice update about that. And that things still don't seem to be fully resolved between William and Mark in that way.
Okay, first of all, I do not believe a word that Cecil says until we see Rick in the flesh. And even then, I need to test. We need like a little knife on the finger or something like that to check, to double, to triple check to see that this is the same person that we left with him, because I do not believe him. But also, yeah. Like, until we see a person and have that test checked out, I do not buy that, like, Rick is actually okay. I feel like this is going to be a plot point that is coming up at some point. I would like him to be okay. We shall see. And I don't know. I don't even know how you recover from that.
Yeah, that's pretty traumatic. Didn't
he
get
his brain ripped? Yeah, he got his brain ripped out. Like,
yeah, I mean, he got his emotions shut down. Like, he's not able to really emote the same way anymore. I just wouldn't be surprised if we see Rick, and he is obviously probably working for Cecil, going to be one of Cecil's soldiers, which will be interesting to see. So, yeah, I do think with the mention of Rick, that we'll probably see him pop up sooner rather than later, I think.
And then, but on your other point there, I do feel like, obviously, this is, like, a hard thing to overcome here. Like, this is especially between, like, the friendship. So I think because, like, this was brought up again, this will probably be something that is, like, a point of conflict at some point. But also, like, yeah, Mark messed up there, but then him messing up in that time led William to push him to mess up another time in a different way another time. So, like, maybe don't compare apples to oranges, William. I love William, but, like, slow your roll here.
Yeah, William. So William and Mark are, you know, are in the middle of this conversation. There's a knock on the door. William goes to get it. And the face of William, I didn't know who was at the other end of that door when William opened the door. Like, oh. I was like, oh, what is going on here? Is it Debbie? Is it someone else? But no, it's friggin' Seance Dog. Childhood property come to life. For me, this would probably be the comparison of me and like that would have been like the Green Ranger on the other side of the door from Power Rangers. Like, hey, Jason, how's it going? I'm like, oh my God, Tommy, how are you?
Could the Green Ranger would be able to persuade you to fly into space to save a species that you've never met?
100%, for sure.
Yeah.
If he like called the Dragon Zord down and was like, come on, let's take a ride on my Zord to go save a civilization. I'd be like, I'm down. Let's go.
I'd have to think about it. I feel like,
What's your seance dog?
I don't know. I mean, I watched a lot of TV as a kid, like a lot of like cartoons and stuff like that. Honestly, I feel like Cosmo and Wanda could probably get me to go into space.
Jeff Probst, maybe.
Yes. Jeff Probst in his cowboy hat era could get me to go to save a...
Come take a ride on my jet ski, Gia.
Yeah. I think Earl Cole or Sandra Diaz-Twine could probably convince me to do that. I think Sandra would just like drag me there, though. I don't think I would go. She would just say like, go. And I say, sure.
Yeah. Parvy Shallow showed up on my door and like, come on, let's go. I'd be like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
Wherever you want to go.
You got it. Done.
Yeah. But Mark is not buying this. Mark is not buying this as Seance Dog. He's like, this is pretty impossible. Who the hell are you? Seance Dog is trying to really sell this. No, I am Seance Dog. I'm a talking dog. You know, guys don't have that here. He's like, no, we just have regular dogs here. He's like, oh, I am. But Mark is just not. Mark's not having it. And there were moments, there were shades here of Mark where a little bit of Omni-Man is shining through. And Mark is like, tell me who you are now. You have one last chance. Like, oh, Mark, you're getting serious. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, like, with everything that has happened in the past year to this poor boy, I can understand. I don't think I would trust anybody, like, at all. And a flying dog does seem very much out of the realm of possibility. Mm-hmm. So I can understand his hesitation. But also, I don't know what I understand what the aliens said for his reasoning for it. Like, I wanted to take a form that was like more comfortable to you and everything, but like, why? Like, Mark has seen way worse stuff. I'm sure like a alien bug is kind of the least of his worries in terms of like things to be afraid of.
Right. So yeah, like you said, they do end up getting, you know, figuring things out. Nwalzot is the bug's name. He says, listen, I was sent here to Earth from Thraxa to find you. We need help on our planet. We've got meteor showers destroying our planet. We need you to come save our people. We need you desperately. Mark's like, I wish I could, but I got a lot going on here. I'm in school, so I think I'm just going to have to turn this one down. But William pops him out of nowhere and says, Mark, no, you have to help. William says, I'll cover you in all your classes. You have to go. Because the last time you didn't want to help, we both ended up regretting it, referencing the Rick of it all. Because at that moment, Mark was too in his own feelings about Amber to go help Rick. And that's how Rick kind of got the way he is. So William kind of almost guilts Mark into be like, no, you have to help the aliens. So Mark's like,
He does. Let's call it what it is. He does guilt Mark into helping this species. But again, apples and oranges. I'm not saying that like we should listen to every alien species that comes down, and like I'm not saying Cecil of all people is like the end all be all of morality, because he was very against this idea, but he was right here. So
yeah, he ends up being right.
Yeah,
Mark,
it pains me to say it.
Yeah, Mark, you know, does agree to go, and on his way he's telling Cecil, like, listen, I'll be gone for a few weeks, a month tops. I'm like, damn, you expect to be gone that long? But Cecil pretty much orders him not to go, and Mark, you know, for you know, I think kind of surprisingly, he's like, listen, I have to listen to myself before I listen to you, and ditches his Cecil earpiece, which really pisses Cecil off, because this is a form of Mark breaking out of Cecil's control, which is what Cecil has been worried about this whole time. Mark possibly becoming more and more like Omni-Man and less in Cecil's kind of sphere of control.
Yeah, I think it's so complicated because I understand the fear, right? Of like, I don't want this to be like, he has all of the same powers and capabilities of hurting a lot of people as Omni-Man. So that, and like, so I totally get that. But like, it really isn't fair for someone, especially because he like put his whole life on the line to try to stop Omni-Man the first time. And it's just like, it's really hard, especially when it's like, it's so difficult for us to really pin down like where Cecil is at a lot of the time. Just like, does he actually care for Mark, or is he more worried about the control aspect, or is it like a little bit of both? I want to believe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, but I think there's like a little itty bitty space in Cecil's soul for Mark, but the bigger piece of Cecil's soul is about protecting the Earth and making sure that Mark doesn't go off the deep end.
Yeah, exactly. But and they say that like his safety is the first priority, but we know that's not true. So it's just, there's so many questions that I still have answered, and I have an idea about like where they are going to fall. But in this show, everything's possible, so I could be very, very wrong about that.
Yeah. Before Mark takes off, he makes sure to check in with Amber. He says, "Listen, I gotta go to space again. My bad. Sorry." Amber, to her credit, says, "You don't have to apologize to me for about saving lives. Go ahead and go." Mark gets her to tell his mama all about this. I'd be like, actually, I think you should probably call your mom. I don't want to be left with that duty at all.
At least William has known her longer. At least since he was so adamant about me going in the first place, have him tell your mom.
Yeah,
your emotionally unstable, very traumatized mother.
And you can literally take 2 seconds and call your mom and just tell her to be gone. But I think Mark also doesn't want to go into that right now, because things seem a little strained between him and Debbie. So he's like, I'll have someone else do it. I got to worry about saving these species of aliens, whatever. Nice excuse, Mark, whatever. You know, he does tell Amber right before he leaves that he loves her, but we're not sure if she heard it because the line went dead, because I guess they're going outside of reception in space or whatever. So we find out it's going to take 6 days to get to Thraxa, but we have kind of sped past those 6 days because Mark eventually gets to Thraxa. They arrive. You know, Nualzat is, you know, showing him around. The planet seems pretty peaceful. Not the chaotic death spiral that Mark was kind of sold here about meteor showers and whatnot. So Mark's like, "What's up with that?" I like Nualzat. He's like, I don't know. I must be having dementia or something, because I don't know. I don't know. I'll just have the monarch explain it to you.
Yeah, that's okay. First of all, that lie is terrible. And the second I see that there is no danger of a meteor, like, Mark, you gotta get out of there. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, that is the first sign that things are not going to end well for you.
Yeah, something's amiss here. So we get introduced to the monarch. We see a shadow. And that's what I was like, uh-oh. Is this? Could it be? Could it be him? And yes, it was Omni-Man. Oh my god.
I hate him so much. I still hate him. It's so aggravating that, you know, I really thought we were going to get like a full season break from Omni-Man. Or like he was going to come back at like the very tail end of season 2, like episode 7 or 8. And I'm just kind of bummed we got him so early. No, I'm very happy that J.K. Simmons has a job and like they kept him booked and busy. But I am very upset about Omni-Man. I just do not like this man.
Yeah, jacked J. Jonah Jameson is back. He says, "Hello, son. It's been a while." And the episode proper goes off at that moment. It's like, oh my gosh, what is this? Like you said, I did not expect to see Omni-Man this soon. I would have bet my money that it was going to be the last scene of the season that Omni-Man comes back. Because we it seemed that we had so much else to deal with this season. But yes. No, it looks like Omni-Man is back here in episode 3. So going to be very interesting to see how that turns out. But we did have other stories going on this episode. When Amber and Mark started getting busy, we were diverted to another plot. Like, oh, okay, Mark seems busy. Let's go check in on someone else.
And I did chuckle about how they actually made that transition.
Yeah, I love the narrator. Yes. He's like, let's move on to something else, shall we? But yes, we do get to check in with our friend, our old buddy, Alan the Alien. So you know, we kind of got a whole story arc for Alan the Alien here. We got to be introduced to his origin story, and possibly his ending story. But more on that later. So we get introduced to Alan. He says, "We go to a world where there an alien world called Unopa. All is good, very peaceful, very nice society. But wouldn't you know it, those freaking Viltrumites struck. They destroyed the world, subjugated the community. The Unopians tried to fight back, but it wasn't working out. The Viltrumites are just too much to handle." But some of the Unopians were able to escape on spacecrafts and start to rebuild their population at different outposts. A lot of banging going on, a lot of birthing going on, trying to restock the coffers, if you will. So Thetis, the leader of Coalition of Planets, gets a gist of what's happening with the Unopians and invites them to join in the Coalition of Planets to help with the fight against the Viltrumites. The Unopians are trying to breed the ultimate weapon to defeat the Viltrumites. They try and try and try again, but they eventually get to Alan. They find their weapon. Alan is their champion. Alan is their hero until he goes up against a Viltrumite and gets his butt kicked. At that point, this is a kind of a parallel to Captain America in a way. He is their super soldier. He is their fighting weapon, their greatest hero, but even our greatest hero has people he cannot beat, and he still can't beat the Viltrumites. So they kind of shut down that whole program. Like, we just can't do it, guys. They don't try to build on Alan. They're just like, yeah, I guess it's not gonna work.
Oh my god, this was a lot. This felt like very, how do I say it? Not necessarily out of nowhere, because I was really excited at the prospect that we were getting like an Alan's episode, like something where he was largely the focus of. I should have known better, but it just felt very out of nowhere, especially because like I was really looking forward to this idea of Mark getting to meet the rest of this coalition that is warring or like trying to rebel against the Viltrumites, and it just went into, and I have faith in the show that I'm going to get my questions answered about this specific plot point. But Alan was really the connection between Mark and this coalition. And I just don't really know where we go from here like what was kind of the point of all of this at this point in the show when we have so many other things about this coalition that have not been answered, or like what is Mark's part going to be in it? So it just felt very much like a downer in that area. And I was actually very excited for this part of the episode.
Yeah. So we do get a little more about Alan. He's, you know, because he failed at beating the Viltrumite, he got kind of put in charge. He got the job of evaluation officer to find other heroes on other planets that will hopefully be able to fight the Viltrumites. You know, we got to see earlier in the season one how he kind of stumbled upon Mark because he accidentally went to the wrong planet, but it turned out to be a good thing. I did like how, you know,
they still give him shit for that.
Yes, for sure. Yes. But then they introduce them. They sometimes change the entire universe. You have to be. And instead of the Invincible card, we get an Alan the Alien card, which was an interesting way to kind of shake things up a little bit, because we didn't get an Invincible card at all. Mark wasn't the focal point of this episode. It seemed to be Alan the Alien. He got his own title card, which was nice. But we do see Alan. I think this is probably the point where Alan comes back from his meeting with Mark, and he brings back all the information about Mark. He tells the whole council, the coalition, about Mark and about how, you know, he found this Viltrumite that left his post. You know, Omni-Man got into a fight with Mark and he bounced. He's out, which has never been heard of before. It had never been done. So the council is like, okay, this might be something. We might have something here. We might have a way to, you know, defeat the Viltrumites, at least try and fight the Viltrumites. So Alan, apparently, you know, job well done to Alan. He found us a hero. Thetis goes to talk to Alan alone. He says, listen, we had this planet, Acreon, joined up the coalition, but then right after they joined up, they got destroyed by the Viltrumites. So I think there might be a mole in the system, and he wants Alan to investigate and figure out who the mole is. Alan's very excited about this duty. He goes home, and I mean, just the cutest little pet ever, Vorg, yes! Cyclops cat is Alan's pet.
Vorg. Yes, and he got his own little segment, like, after, yeah, you know, while Alan was busy. And yeah, we learned more about this little cat. I love him.
Yeah, so Alan meets up with Telia, who apparently is his girlfriend, also a general in the coalition. So I mean, maybe a little fraternizing here a little bit. They
ship it. It's cute.
Yeah, we're here for it, as short as it may last. They start getting down to business. And I love the narrator. He's like, "Oh goodness, tentacles. Let's move on." And this the zoom in on Vorg. He's like, because it's funny how they do this, because he's like, okay, well, Alan's getting busy. Let's check back in with Mark and Amber, and they're probably studying or something, right? And like, nope, they're still banging too. Let's go. Oh, it's Vorg. It's a cat. Look at him. He's got one eye. So good. So funny.
Do we know who was the narrator for this? Because we normally, was it the same person that does like the previously on?
I don't think so. You know, it sounded to me like Paul F. Tompkins. That sounded like his voice.
It does sound like Paul F. Tompkins, actually.
But I did not look to see who the credit was. But if I was to bet money, I would say it's Paul F. Tompkins.
And it makes sense, because he is a very fun voice actor to have. And this voice cast has been phenomenal so far.
Yeah, he really seems like he would fit in with the rest of the voice actors, like a Jason Mantzoukas. All those cats. He seems like he would fit in. He would fit right in there. So it really sounded like him. I wouldn't be surprised if it was him. But after the banging session's over, Alan and Telia go to grab something to eat, because, you know, after all that work, you got to fill your belly. So Telia is like, "What's going on with Thetis? What did he want?" Alan's about to tell her when all of a sudden Alan gets snatched out of his seat, thrown outside into space. I'm like, "Oh, what the hell's going on here?" And wouldn't you freaking know it, it's the Viltrumites. It's three Viltrumites, you know, come to hassle Alan. They ask Alan about, "So what's all this we're hearing about? A Viltrumite left his post and his son? What's up with that?" Which is very interesting, because not many people outside Earth know about that. So Alan's like, How'd you know about that? How'd you figure that out? And honestly, this starts as an interrogation of sorts, but really just ends up being just a execution in a way.
Yeah.
Because they ping pong Alan around a little bit, and then they just really go to town on Alan. And we know this show, right? We know this thing can get gross and graphic, and it really does. We punch out Alan's innards. They hit him so hard, his eye comes out of his socket. His one good eye comes out of his socket and just kind of is floating there. Yeah. And they just kind of bounce him around and they chop his arm off. This was brutal. Brutal.
I don't like the Viltrumite. They have no charisma, uniqueness, nerf, or talent.
Yeah.
They just beat people up in increasingly graphic ways, and it is just like not a fun sight to see.
Yeah, all they have is audacity. That's all they have.
All they have is the audacity. And I just, it's rough, especially because I love Alan so much. Like, he does not deserve, let him at least find out who the mole is first before you beat the shit out of him. Like, yeah. Oh my god, I'm so.
I was like, I was so bummed. I was like, they killed Alan. Alan's dead. But hold on now. Alan is not as dead as we thought, you know, at first. Because he's in some type of like stasis bed, stasis chamber. That's I guess keeping him alive. So we're like, oh wow, I was surprised. Like, oh, Alan's alive. That's awesome. We're gonna get Alan back again at some point. But Thetis, you know, Telly is watching over her man as he convalesces, as he's in his bed, unconscious, trying to get himself back together. Thetis comes in and says, Telly, I know that you and he were special to one another, but, you know, you got to get some sleep. You got to eat something. Go ahead. I'll watch over our guy here. I'll watch over Alan. And once you know it, that some bitch, Thetis, goes over to Alan's life support system, turns it off. We see the color drain from Alan, and I guess we're supposed to assume that that's the end of Alan, but who really knows? Who knows
what's in store for Alan? The Mulder brothers have been murdered like several times from now. So I don't want to. Okay. So I have two questions/comments on this. I am praying that this is not, with all of the possibilities that we have on the show, that this is not the end of Alan for us. Like, in some way, we're going to either get him from another dimension, they're going to revive him at some point or something. I am just refusing to believe that this is the end, the absolute end of, like, the character Alan on Invincible for us. So I'm very hopeful about that.
Listen, we're dealing with multiverses this season. Yes. So, you know, we could get another Alan from somewhere. Who knows?
And even with even without all of that, like, they have all of this technology. Like, they brought My Immortal back several times. And like, I just feel like there are other possibilities here. So I am hoping that this is not the end, because I think this would be a very crappy end for a character that I really like. And it just kind of is like, it's not what I want for this character.
For sure.
Yes. But then the other thing I have here, my other question/comment, does this mean that that guy was the mole? Like, what?
Oh, yeah. What?
Yes. Okay. So he was the mole, and he just wanted to mess with Alan and tell him to find the mole that he knew. Like, what was the reason?
I don't know what the point of that was. But honestly, when Thetis took Alan aside to begin with, I was like, that guy don't seem right. Something about him doesn't seem right. And then, you know, when he comes, when he's like, you go on ahead, Telia, and do whatever you want. It's like, uh-oh, this is bad. Thetis is a bad guy. He's a bad dude. And he proved me right by basically killing Alan here. And, you know, we're about halfway through the episode, inside the episode proper. And we get credits. I had to check and like, wait a minute. How much longer is this? It was like, literally halfway through.
I'm like, wait a minute, that feels very quick, right? Yeah. Like, that felt very quick to me. So I also did not believe it. I was cleaning. I did a deep clean of my shower yesterday, and that's what I had. Invincible was what I had on. So I'm like watching the show while I am cleaning, and then halfway through the credits start playing. I'm like, I know I did not miss like 20 minutes worth of content. So I also had to like look on the time to see how much time we had. Yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah, I definitely hit my remote. Was like, we're only halfway through. What the hell's going
on?
So you basically got another half of an episode of an extra post-credit scene, I guess. Because we had so much more to go through. We do check back in with the Guardians, of course. Probably my least favorite subplot of the show so far, if I'm being honest, because it's just not much is going on.
I need them to emphasize more of the characters than what we are getting currently, because I love Rex. I love Rex right now while he's down. He has been so funny. He is saying like everything I am thinking about this whole My Immortal duplicate situation and everything. Like, he's just hilarious to me. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but like the him when he is down and out is pretty funny.
For sure.
I don't like the My Immortal duplicate thing is still very weird to me. I do not buy the, well, if you put all the ages of my of that was my so dumb. Duplicate. That is not, no, that is not an excuse, okay? You can't just add ages to make one official age in there.
That math is not mathing at all,
that,
miss.
That is not girl math. That is not boy math. Yeah. That is not. That is some other foul type of math in there, and I am not. I refute that.
That's superhero math.
Yes, exactly. Superhero math. Guardians of the Globe math right there, and I don't even think it's particularly. I don't think it will hold up.
Let's be honest. It's just duplicate math.
Yes, duplicate math. So absolutely not. I am kind of over the Rudy Monster Girl storyline. Like, I just think they focus too much on it when what I have been saying the past few episodes is I want to get to know all the other Guardians. Like, yeah. They even added in another one. Actually, they've added in two now, and I don't know anything about any of them, but they insist on focusing on, like, these four other characters who just kind of feels played out when we have all, like, in the entire other half of the Guardians that I barely remember their names at this point. That's how little we know about them.
Yeah, and the storylines here in the Guardians and some of the other storylines around Invincible feel very one note and a little basic to me. Like, you know, Rex and Duplicate saying, "I'm mad you're banging the immortal." Like, it doesn't feel special. It feels normal in a way. It doesn't feel superhero story to me. So when I'm in these kind of storylines, I'm waiting for it to be over and waiting for my more interesting story to come back, basically.
Yeah.
When I'm in the Guardian storyline, really.
It's basically like the Amazon Prime version of a snack break in there. So I'm like, I can hear them arguing about the same thing in the kitchen while I go get a little snack.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty much what takes place. Rex and Duplicate are arguing about who cheated on who. I do kind of love Rex. He's like, you know, at least I'm not a cheater. And Kate's like, actually, yes, you are. He's like, well, I mean, I was, but I'm not anymore.
Yes. That is Rex math.
Yeah, that is definitely Rex math, 100%. Yes. So we then get some Monster Girl and Rudy talk. She visits him while he's kind of mapping out his brain, trying to isolate the fear that he felt that made him freeze up. He wants to really get rid of it. And Monster Girl, who I think I'm just learning this episode's name is Amanda, you know, basically tells him, you actually kind of need that fear. That fear is something that will help you when you're in these situations. But, you know, you do you, whatever you got, whatever you want to do. So, yeah, that's and Rudy kind of admits to her, like, listen, it's not only was the fear freezing me up on the battlefield, it's affecting me, you know, in my everyday life, because I wanted to ask you out. I wanted to ask you to a movie, but my fear was stopping me. So cute little Rudy asks Amanda / Monster Girl to a movie. And she agrees to go with them, which was a nice little fun, cute thing. I mean, it's so weird that these two people look like children, but are really, you know, Amanda is 20 something and Rudy is 30. So yeah. It's kind of a weird thing to be seeing. I did want to mention, because I kind of skipped over a little bit inside of the Rex and Duplicate and all them arguing. Freaking Shapesmith comes into the gym.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank you for reminding that.
And he's like, hello, I would like to use the treadmill. I would like to run in place while stationary.
Yes.
And then for him to go over there and just run in place on the treadmill without turning the treadmill. Yes. He looked like a glitching NPC on a video game who's just like walking in place. That cracked me the hell up.
My favorite. And then after all of this, Rex is just like, what planet are you from? Like, he's just like, oh, we need to talk about the elephant in the room. You are not from this planet. Tell us about yourself. Like, it was just it was a mess. It was the whole globe is a mess, but they're just like trying to hide the fact that they're a mess. And I don't get it, because like we have all of these other characters that we have yet to hear like really anything about their like thoughts and feelings on there. And they keep adding more.
I'm still waiting to figure out what the hell Bulletproof does. I still don't know.
Like, what is I think Bulletproof had like a line here, maybe.
I don't think he was even seen in the episode. I don't recall ever seeing him.
Okay, yeah. So, like, come on now. If we're going to be adding all of these people, like, the moment with Shapesmith was very funny. I will give that. But, like, Can we please get more of the other characters here as well? I just feel like with everything going on, the Guardians excerpt of it just feels very dry right now and does not really seem to be going anywhere, if that makes sense. Because they're just like, I want to feel like they're going towards something, whether it's they're going to be a team stronger than ever or they're going to fall apart and realize they need to do another rework of this team. But like, can we please get somewhere with these people?
Yeah, it's just, it seems to be very like meandering right now. Just
it's
just standing in place, if you will, to borrow from Shapesmith. Yes. But honestly, the Shapesmith gag made the whole Guardians thing worth it in this episode for me, because it was funnier than it should have been, but I honestly fell out when I saw that.
It was so great. For all of my annoyances with the storyline at this point, this was very funny.
Yeah. We do check back in with Rudy and Amanda. They're going to their movie. Amanda tries to kind of, you know, poke into Rudy, find out about his past, figure out, you know, who he is, what he's all about. But Rudy is not about that. Like, he doesn't want to open up to her. They try to get into the movie, but the problem is the movie is rated R and they both look like they're children. So the ticket taker does not want to let them in. But Amanda pays some lady to say she is her parent, and then they can go to the movie. Now, as a former movie theater worker, I can tell you that's not how that works.
Yeah.
Okay? You got to go in there with them. You can't just say they're good to go, and they go in. So that's not how that works at all.
Yeah, no. As someone that would sneak into movie theaters, I would pay. But I didn't necessarily go to the movie that I paid for. Is this really like, I think this worker just needs to have an excuse to not get fired, you know?
Well, yeah, listen, you know, you gotta do your job, but you can't, like, you know, you don't have to be that stringent and strict about it. Like, you can look the other way sometimes when you know something doesn't smell right, but you're like, whatever. If I'm not gonna get in trouble for it, I'm down with it. I'm fine. Do whatever you gotta do.
Yeah, exactly. But like, also, they both look 10. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that, like, you are very clearly not, obviously they actually are over 18, but like, you very clearly look like a child.
Yeah, I did like Rudy challenging the MPAA ratings. He's like, now why would it be that a parent's present changes the suitability for a child to see this movie? I was like, tell him, Rudy, tell him.
Which is also very fair. Which could have also been a clue that he was well over 18.
Yeah, that's for sure.
18-year-olds do not talk like that.
Or at the very least, mature enough to see whatever movie they were seeing.
Yes.
The Amanda, you know, the talk goes to what Rudy has experienced as you know, in his life, because he hasn't seemed to have done a lot. She's like, what else haven't you done? And we flash to a Burger Mart, AKA like a Burger King ish type place, fast food joint. And Rudy freaking loves fast food. I mean, Welcome to being a human, Rudy.
Yeah, that's just a universal experience.
Yeah, that's, everyone loves that. Everyone, that's a thing. Like I said, the Guardians, aka Rudy and Amanda's story, was like kind of definitely the slow part of this episode.
Yeah,
I really wanted to go somewhere with it, but you know, we got what we got here, and you know, it was what it was.
It was like the one semi hopeful excerpt of this entire episode.
Yes. And so to bring the mood entirely down, let's go check in with Debbie. Debbie's story, you know, it continues after she drops off Mark. She's very emotional about it. She cries in her car and, you know, she calls the number on the card that Olga gave her. Someone answers, has been expecting Debbie's call and tells her where to go and when to meet. We see Debbie going to the community center, and like I thought, it seems to be a support group for, I guess you would kind of say like Al-Anon for superheroes, you know, the friends and family of superheroes, whether you've lost them or you just have some other trauma about it. It's your typical run of the mill kind of support group meeting. Everyone's in a circle. People are sharing about their story. As Debbie walks in, we hear someone talk a little bit about how he's doing. He lost someone close to him who was a superhero, and talked about how, you know, it's terrifying and exhausting to be without her. He misses her so much. We hear that his name is Theo. And so, you know, the thing, like, you know, I read, you know, when we get the previously ons, I'm like, okay, I know what this is probably about, because the previously on highlighted the Green Ghost. It's like, okay, I kind of clocked this early on. I was like, this is probably the Green Ghost person.
Yeah.
And that's a reason we're hearing his story, his part of it. So Debbie meets Carol, who runs the support group. She says, listen, there are just a couple rules here. You are very strict on anonymity, more strict than your typical run-of-the-mill kind of like anonymous groups, because a lot of sensitive information. And the other group is just share when you're ready. The meeting is over. Debbie runs into Theo outside. She's preoccupied with trying to get in contact with Mark. Mark's not answering her back. But Theo does invite her to go to this kind of dive bar with the rest of the group, which they tend to go to. And Debbie does indeed take him up on it. Now, when we get to the bar, only Theo is there. No one else is there. I don't know where these other people are. I don't know if Theo was trying to lure her on a date or what.
I don't know. I want to say no, because it felt like maybe he was just trying to kind of like welcome her in the group, because they're talking about like his dead partner and what he presumes is her dead partner as well. So it almost seems like they're just like trying to like open the group up a little bit or something. Like, I don't know for sure, but it does not end well. It ended exactly how I expected it to end well, which is even more screwed up. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So they're at the dive bar. They're both commiserating about how they missed their loved ones. And Theo ends up revealing that his loved one's name is Alana, and that she was the Green Ghost. And yikes, it gets awkward. Debbie recognizes his name right off the bat. She's like, oh shit. She excuses herself. She kind of runs out of there. Theo, of course, goes to check on Debbie. He's like, what's going on? And she tells him the truth. She says her husband was Omni-Man, and Theo is not pleased. He basically tells her, listen, don't come back to the group. It's not a safe space with you there. And Debbie's, you know, she says, listen, I didn't know. I didn't know about Omni-Man. And Theo just shoots back at her and says, you know, you really should have, though, and just walks off. And Debbie just left heartbroken and devastated to just walk off into the night.
This is why these groups are anonymous, sir.
Yeah, Theo, this is your fault.
Yeah, honestly, though, because like, okay, I totally get it that you are very sad because your partner passed in a very traumatic way. Mm-hmm. He is totally right to those feelings. And he is totally right. And he is totally entitled to not wanting the wife of his partner's murderer to also be in this group. But, comma, like, that's why they keep it anonymous, so that you can't reveal who. And they probably would have figured it out at some point if Debbie gotten to the point where she was like comfortable sharing and everything. Yeah. But that's part of the reason they do this type of stuff. Like, obviously, like, not for not, you know, for Superheroes Anonymous here, but like Alcoholics Anonymous, like Al-Anon, Alateen, like all of those types of groups, you keep things anonymous so that you can't trace it back to certain people or like their personal information or anything like that. So it's just like a very it was clearly in violation of the rules, even though this is a clearly like very specific particular circumstance here.
Yeah, it was a tough scene. It was a tough scene to watch because Theo is not forgiving at all, which, you know, don't kind of really blame him, but I think if he had stopped to really kind of hear Debbie out, he may have had some compassion for her, but he was not trying to hear it at all.
And also, he has not been married to a sociopath for 20 years. So, like, why? Like, he has no idea about, like, whether or not she had a reason to know about whether or not Omni-Man was like this. So, like, it really isn't her fault. And, like, who is going to marry someone thinking that they could possibly be a sociopath? You know, like, no one does. Yeah.
I mean, listen, Debbie just keeps getting kicked down further and further and further into the well of, you know, of emotion. I was hoping that this would be kind of a turning point for her, but it just seems to have made things even worse. So that's definitely a bummer. Her whole storyline is a bummer so far this season.
And listen, Debbie is my favorite character, so we better have goddamn good things coming her way at some point, because this is literally torture for me.
Yeah, we need to give some joy to Debbie sooner rather than later, please.
Yeah, so no, seriously, I am over Debbie's suffering. Like, let's please give her a win somewhere. I would just really appreciate that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is our episode in totality. Gia, did you have anything else on your mind about the episode? Any place you want to see any of the storylines go? What are you excited about, the return of Omni-Man?
No, I hate that Omni-Man has returned, but I do, like, it made me want to watch the next episode right away. So, I am disappointed that we got Omni-Man so soon, but it did make me want to watch the next episode, like, immediately afterwards. So, I'm excited to see where things are going. I'm excited to kind of see some of the outcomes of it. This is similar to how I felt at the beginning of last season, where it felt like the first two episodes were kind of like a slow info dump. Now things are starting to pick up. I do have full faith that we will start to really speed up the storylines in the second half of this season. But I'm still hoping that, you know, we'll get a little more of a couple more answers to the questions that I have about all of these side stories. Because it does feel like they're trying to juggle a lot into like 46 minutes episodes.
Yeah. And, you know, I was for sure after that first episode of the season that Engstrom was going to be the main thrust of the season, but
yes,
he was totally out of this episode. You know, Eve was out of this episode. So we're dealing with a lot, and I'm curious to see how they wrap it all up.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the shows that I have watched before, once they start dealing with like multiple universes and stuff, things can kind of go a little off the rails. And I have faith in the show still, so I don't necessarily think that's where it's going to go, but I'm curious to see the path that we take here, because I agree. I think after the first episode with Engstrom, I was expecting to see more of him, and we really haven't.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how big that story actually is, because I thought it was going to be huge, but we have 5 episodes left of the season, so
yes.
And we seem to be probably going to be dealing with a lot of Omni-Man next episode, so we'll have 4 episodes after that. So
boo to this man.
Gotta see where that leads us to. But yeah, that's our episode 3 of season 2. Gia, do you want to tell everybody where they can find you, what you're up to lately?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Classically Gia for all of my reality TV shenanigans. Over on Silent Podcast, I am doing my weekly recaps of Survivor 45 on I Don't Know About That. We also have a very special episode coming soon of Slosh Survivor, which is our combination of drunk history and Survivor history. And even though this isn't Survivor Podcast, please look at my other work on Twitter on the Survivor Diversity Campaign at Serve Diversity. That's at SURV Diversity. And inside Survivor, I am doing our weekly roundups with my good friend Christine Palin. So please take a look at some of those and, you know, watch more Invincible and give us 5 stars, all the good things.
All the good stuff. Thumbs up on YouTube, reviews, ratings on your podcasting platforms. If they have reviews and ratings, we would be greatly appreciated. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at JAYR1085. As far as podcasts go, I've got a few here on Post Show Recaps. I am covering, just finished wrapping up Loki last week. So if you missed any of that, go check that out with Sasha Joseph and I. Also covering the Gilded Age here on Post Show Recaps with Marissa Garza. We're in the second season of that show. That is a fun show. I didn't think I was going to have so much fun on, but I'm having a blast covering it. Also on Rob Has a Podcast, the Rehab Ups Network, I'm covering the show Married at First Sight with my co-host Asia Welch over on our podcast Perfect Match. Having fun on that show as well, so go check us out there if you can. And until next week, we will see you guys later.